Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 5th of December 2023. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers chosen by Mandy Wood and Diane Sider and read by Rosemary Shergold and Ralph Weirs. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to access OxTalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to listen to OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
The NHS has warned people in England that they only have a few weeks left to book an appointment to receive a potentially life-saving COVID and/or flu vaccine. Booking systems for the vaccination in England are set to close in the coming weeks, and the NHS has urged those eligible to book, with hundreds of thousands of appointments still available. The NHS said, vaccination is the best way for people to ensure they and their families are protected against flu and COVID at Christmas, when viruses spread more easily as people spend more time indoors. A total of 11,404,669 COVID and 16,190,661 flu vaccinations have been administered by the NHS in England since the beginning of the autumn campaign. A record 4.5 million people have received their flu and COVID vaccines in the same appointment. More than 11 million COVID and 16 million flu vaccinations have been carried out in England since the beginning of the autumn campaign. Booking systems to arrange an appointment for a COVID or flu vaccination will close on December the 15th, making December the 14th the last day to book. It is still possible to book vaccinations after December the 15th through local NHS vaccination services like pharmacies or walk-in sites. However, there will be fewer COVID appointments and people may need to travel further, the NHS warned. National Director for Vaccinations and Screening for NHS England, Steve Russell, said, it only takes a few minutes to book your flu and COVID vaccines online. With thousands of eligible people having already taken up the offer this year and record numbers booking via the NHS app. But with just 2 weeks to go until online bookings close, we're urging those who haven't yet come forward to do so. NHS staff continue to deliver vaccines at more sites than ever before, and we've seen record numbers choosing to have their flu and COVID vaccines at the same time, making it even easier for people. Consultant epidemiologist at UK HSA, Dr. Jamie Lopez Bernal, said, Getting vaccinated as soon as possible will help reduce your risk of getting seriously ill with flu or COVID this festive season. So, in amongst getting sorted for Christmas, make time to prioritise your health by getting vaccinated. The NHS urged parents especially to ensure that eligible children are protected against the flu with the nasal spray vaccine, as they are at a higher risk of catching and spreading the virus. If caught, it can lead to serious problems like bronchitis and pneumonia, the NHS warned. A boy from Oxfordshire is campaigning for tech giant Apple to change its glasses emoji because it's offensive and insulting. Teddy Cottle, 10, from Henley, thinks the icon, with its protruding front teeth, gives the wrong impression of people who wear glasses. The pupil who attends Sonning Common Primary School in Reading has redesigned the company's emoji, switching the prominent teeth for a small off-centre smile. He told the BBC, "We want to change this. Apple is making it absolutely horrible for people wearing glasses." Apple has been contacted for comment. Teddy added, "They're making people think we're nerds, and it's absolutely horrible. It's making me feel sad and upset. And if I find it offensive, there'll be thousands of people around the world that find it offensive too." The tenacious pupil has named his redesign of the symbol, often referred to unofficially as the nerd emoji, the genius emoji. He hopes Apple will adopt it. Teddy defended his glasses, as they allow him to see a lot better. The schoolchild added that glasses can also be stylish and be used in fashion. Teddy started the petition after noticing the emoji when sending a text to his cousin. He voiced his concerns to one of his teachers, Lisa, who helped him start the petition, asking the tech company to change its icon.
Royal Mail has been slammed over missed hospital appointments in the hectic lead-up to Christmas. Oxford East MP Annalise Dodds has blamed poor standards of service that have meant people have missed hospital appointments, invitations to weddings and funerals, and time-sensitive letters. Elsewhere in the county, Victoria Prentice, MP for Banbury, has visited the town's delivery office after folk were missing hospital appointments. Ms Prentice found the delivery office in Banbury sorting through mail to ensure NHS letters were delivered as priority. However, Ms Dodds has not aware of this happening in Oxford. Barton resident David Lincoln is among those hit by the postal delays. He claimed that he did not receive post for a month with the service slightly improving in recent weeks. Mr Lincoln said, "It's crazy. There's no excuse for it. Three or four people are doing track deliveries instead of letters, which is more important. My wife missed a hospital appointment, but didn't realise until afterwards. It's really annoying. This is why letters are so important. People are missing hospital appointments. People are not getting time-sensitive letters." His views have been echoed by others in the county, including MPs, who have grown frustrated by the delays. Ms Dodds said, "Royal Mail nationally really need to recognise the scale of the problem in Oxford and listen to what local posters and managers are saying about what is needed to fix the system. Trying to brush Oxford's challenges under the carpet will not work. This is especially important in the run-up to Christmas, where there will be potentially even more pressure on the existing hard-working posties in Oxford." She visited the Littlemore Sorting Office and announced twice this year. On October 26th, Ms Dodds found stacks of undelivered letters and parcels after entering through an unlocked door. In a letter shared with the Oxford Mail, Ms Dodds wrote, "I am aware that the poor standards of service have meant that the Oxford East residents have missed appointments, invitations to weddings and funerals, important work and business-related posts, and family communications like birthday cards, not to mention repeatedly receiving time-limited publications very late. Royal Mail says it was committed to restoring the quality of service and has plans in place to improve deliveries. Around 6,000 postmen and women have been recruited nationally over the last 12 weeks, and the Postal Service is taking on 16,000 temporary workers for the Christmas period. It is also acquiring more vehicles and additional parcel sorting sites to handle double the normal volume of parcels expected over the period. A spokesman said, "These actions and others are already making a difference in some areas."
Earlier this month, shoppers enjoyed the four-day Victorian Christmas market in Broad Street, and now stalls are returning to the street and will remain in place until just before Christmas. The market will run for 24 days from Thursday, November the 30th until Saturday, December the 23rd. Trading times will be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday to Thursday and 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. In August, the City Council confirmed that the market would go ahead, organised by LDS Promotions. The announcement came following concerns the event would be cancelled in its usual format due to Nicole Rahimi, the organiser for the past 14 years, pulling out of the event. This was due to her concerns about the cycle lane on Broad Street being kept open. Ms. Rahimi feared a high-speed collision could take place if the County Council remained adamant on keeping the cycle lane open, and she accused the Council of prioritising cyclists over businesses. Following a decision to go ahead with the festive market, City Council leader Susan Brown said LDS Promotions had a track record of organising events in our city. She said earlier, "I am delighted that this year's Christmas market will once again go ahead in Broad Street. As well as supporting local traders, the increased footfall in the centre is a great opportunity for local businesses to attract new customers. And this year, the market will take place for longer, meaning there's even more time for people to experience the joys of Christmas in Oxford." Lara Davis, event organiser at LDS Promotions, said earlier the company was truly honoured to be entrusted with bringing the magic of the Oxford City Christmas market to life this year. She added, "The market will not only provide a platform for local artisans and businesses, but will also serve as a gathering place for the community to celebrate the joys of the festive season. As the Christmas season approaches, the Oxford City Christmas Market stands ready to spread joy, warmth and togetherness."
The number of public electric vehicle charging points in Oxfordshire has risen by more than a quarter over the past year, new figures show. It comes as Vauxhall, who analysed the data, said more must be done to meet the rising demand for electric cars. Figures from the Department of Transport show there were 630 publicly available electric vehicle charging devices in Oxfordshire as of October, including 158 rapid chargers. Overall, it's up 27% from 497 charging devices in October of 2022. In Oxford, there were 153 publicly available electric vehicle charging devices, including 35 rapid chargers. There were 89 available electric charging devices in West Oxfordshire and 85 in South Oxfordshire. Charwell had 195 devices, while 108 devices were publicly available in the Vale of the White Horse. Across the UK, there were nearly 49,220 publicly available chargers as of October, a 42% jump from 2022. Of them, 8,900 were rapid chargers. The figures also show on-street electrical vehicle chargers for homes without driveways have increased by 69% in the last 12 months, with 4,094 new installations recorded in the last quarter. James Taylor, Managing Director at Vauxhall, said, "It's a good signal, but we're still at the beginning of the journey. We need to up the pace if we're to make sure the 40% of households without driveways are not left behind in the transition to electric vehicles and do more outside of London." He added, "The 4,094 new installations is a start, but next year it's forecast there will be hundreds of thousands more new EV cars being registered to comply with the vehicle's emissions trading scheme. We are making progress, but more is needed to match demand. The availability of chargers varied across the UK, with the highest in London, where there were 193 chargers per 100,000 people. On the other end of the scale, Northern Ireland had just 23 per 100,000 vehicles. In the South East, there were 63 electric vehicle chargers per 100,000 people. A Department for Transport spokesperson said, "We've put more than £2 billion into helping people switch to electric vehicles, and in October, one in four new cars came with a plug." They added, "The number of public charge points has increased by 42% since this time last year, and we've allocated £381 million across every area in England to deliver tens of thousands more local chargers, particularly helping drivers without access to off-street parking."
David Johnston, MP for Wantage, has launched a constituency-wide survey to ask people to tell him where they are seeing issues on local roads that need to be resolved. Mr. Johnston intends to use the data to comprise a complete map of all issues pertaining to local roads. He will then share this with Oxfordshire County Council and Highways and press for action to be taken. Suggested issues include potholes, congestion, speeding and other safety concerns. The MP has been campaigning for road improvements since he was first elected, having met with the Roads Minister and representatives from the County Council on numerous occasions to discuss, in addition to holding a debate about the A34 and A420 in Parliament. David Johnston, OBE MP, said, "When I am out and about each week, one of the most frequent conversations I have with local people is that our roads seem so much worse than when we drive in other parts of the country. I experience the problems myself when I drive around our area, and I have been campaigning to improve our roads since I was elected. Although the government has consistently given Oxfordshire more money to fix potholes, there is more to do. I want to pull together a complete map of all of the issues we are facing and where. The more people who take part, the better data to make our case, so please do take part." The survey can be found at https://www.david-johnston.org.uk/news/david-launches-his-local-roads-survey.
Parents and their children took to the streets in Oxford to protest against the climate and environmental record of local MPs. The protest took aim at the environmental record of East Oxford MP Annalise Dodds, Oxford West and Abingdon member Leila Moran and Whitney's Robert Courts outside the Radcliffe Camera. Parents and carers from three Oxfordshire constituencies gathered with their children in Oxford city centre with large colourful banners. The action was organised by the Local Parents for Future group, a parent-led climate group that's not affiliated to any political party but is concerned about ensuring MPs keep the climate crisis as a top priority. Similar actions took place last weekend, November the 25th and 26th, designed to hold MPs to account for their records on the climate and environment. Rowan Ryrie, mother of two from East Oxford and an organiser with Parents for the Future in Oxford, said, "We are here because we want our elected leaders to do more to protect our planet. We know the children and places we love are already being affected by environmental degradation and climate change. Our rivers are shockingly polluted and poor air quality is affecting our children's health. We want to thank Annalise Dodds and Leila Moran for their support of climate action, but there is more all parties could do to help us transition more quickly to clean, homegrown, renewable energy and help keep families warm this winter. We want to see climate and environment at the top of the political agenda as it is on many parents' minds as we head into a general election year. Ensham resident Victoria Thomas said, "Robert Courts talks the talk and does seem to care about certain environmental issues, like the welfare of the swift population. However, he has consistently voted with the government against measures that would best help look after the climate and the natural world. It's disappointing, and I'm here to call him out on this." Harriet Pike, a 14-year-old youth activist, said, "I'm 14 and I don't get to vote, but my future's being burned by politicians who don't care. Nature, which is the most important thing we have, is being destroyed by people who aren't listening to us. Please, if you have a vote, use it to protect the planet." Co-director of Parents for Future UK, Charlotte Howell-Jones, said, "Parents up and down the country have reminded their local MPs that how they vote and what they say on climate and environmental issues matters, and they will be held to account for it at the ballot box." The Oxford Mail approached Ms. Courts, Ms. Moran and Ms. Dodds for comment.
An Oxford homelessness charity is calling for donations to develop a therapeutic garden. Emma Us Oxford is participating in the Big Give Christmas Challenge 2023, which doubles every penny donated. The challenge is the UK's largest matching funding campaign and runs from noon on November the 28th to December the 5th. In 2022, the donations helped Emma Us Oxford raise £22,570. The funds were used to renovate move-on accommodations for residents who were ready for increased independence. This year, donations will be utilised to design a therapeutic garden for homeless people. The goal is to create a peaceful environment where they can nurture their gardening skills, grow plants, and regain their wellness. Eddie Blaze, chief executive of Emma Us Oxford, said, "It's never been a better time to donate to us, as every penny will be doubled during the week of the Big Give, a once-in-a-year opportunity for us to boost donations to help the vital work we do." The charity will collaborate with a local garden designer to ensure the garden meets the needs of the residents. It seeks to bridge the gap homeless people encounter in securing employment and housing. The charity provides accommodation, work and support to help these individuals restart their lives. To have your donation to Emma Us Oxford doubled, participate in the Big Give Challenge.
Possibly the UK's most controversial chocolate debate went on trial at the Oxford Union, with help from a former Radio 1 DJ. Bounty bars were controversially removed from the celebrations tub in a pre-Christmas trial last year, after 39% of consumers wanted the coconut-flavoured treats banished for good. The debate, which took place as the Oxford Mail went to press on Monday, November the 27th, was hosted by presenter and DJ Chris Stark, a self-described bounty lover. The union will answer the question, to bounty or not to bounty, that is the question, in a discussion that was set to divide opinion. Talking to social media, Mr. Stark said, "As a proud bounty lover, it's a travesty that UK celebrations removed the bounty from its tin last year. So I managed to blag an invite to the Oxford Union, where we can finally settle this debate and be the voice bounty never had. Which side are you on?" The bounty debate has raged for years. 2 years ago, manufacturers Mars Wrigley launched a seasonal bounty return scheme where people could exchange bounty bars for Maltesers. The snack giant then took the next step last year by trialling the removal of the coconut chocolate from celebrations tubs in the run-up to Christmas, before going in the complete opposite direction to offer bounty-only boxes available in selected Tesco stores. Mars Wrigley said its own research of 2,000 Britons aged between 18 and 65 suggested that 18% would feel irritated to find only bounty bars were left in the tub, while 58% believed it would lead to a family argument. while 39% wanted the bars gone for good, 22% liked Bounty the least of all in the tubs options. Some 28% were of the opinion that coconut had no place in a chocolate bar at all. However, this year, celebrations are launching a competition ahead of Christmas where people get the chance to win a solid gold Bounty bar valued at £25,000. The 9-carat gold bar, weighing over 1 kilogram, is one of a kind, with the potential for its value to increase over time as the cost of gold increases. That way, people could get their hands on the solid gold Bounty bar through finding a Bounty Blue ticket inside a tub of celebrations being sold at Tesco. One lucky person will get that prize, but there are other tickets hidden in the tubs for other rewards, including up to £10,000. Every ticket finder is a winner, with 500,000 opportunities to win.
A free online activity advent calendar has been launched by an Oxford charity to help keep children entertained this Christmas. Homestart Oxford, which supports children under 5 and their families across Oxfordshire, has developed the calendar to aid parents looking for affordable ways to entertain their children at Christmas. The Blackbird Lees-based charity's initiative gives families an idea for a different activity to try each day without breaking the bank. The calendar promises a variety of low-cost or free ideas, spanning from baking gingerbread reindeer and crafting snowflake decorations to spotting festive lights on a winter walk. Homestart Oxford provides support to families dealing with issues such as mental health, illness, disability, abuse, addiction, isolation, relationship stress, or poverty, and offers this advent calendar as yet another form of assistance. Kerry Centre, Homestart Oxford's head of family support, said, "Christmas is a magical time, but it can also be one of the hardest times for families, especially with the added cost of living pressures. We always have this in mind. It's why our stay and play groups are free and why we run special free events over the summer holidays too. We decided to create the advent calendar for families so everyone can keep the Christmas spirit going but not have to worry about the expense that normally goes with it. The advent calendar is just one of the many services Homestart Oxford provides for families in need. Further details about the events and services provided by the charity can be found on the charity's website. The free online advent calendar is accessible via https://buff/3GB2LR.
Restoring a railway between Carterton, Whitney, Ensham and Oxford could cost £900 million, a new study has found. A report into the feasibility of the Carterton-Whitney-Oxford rail corridor was commissioned by Oxfordshire County Council after the Whitney-Oxford Transport Group proposed reviving the line in 2021. Details were released earlier this year along with the summary reports. The full reports, which have now been updated, have now been published. Judy Roberts, Cabinet Member for Infrastructure and Development Strategy, said, "The work so far shows this transformational project would be possible and could provide potentially significant transport and other benefits in the longer term, in line with our policies to improve public transport. However, it would also come at a very significant cost, as well as having wider planning considerations, which we would need to discuss with West Oxfordshire District Council and other partners." The study also identified environmental issues, but found if it went ahead, it's predicted to be profitable. The council study predicted journey times of 23 minutes from Carterton to Oxford, 16 minutes from Whitney and 11 minutes from Ensham, reducing journey times for passengers by more than 70%. The first phase of the railway could be delivered by 2033 at the earliest. However, Construction costs of building the line alone are estimated by the report at between £700 million and £900 million, with the scheme potentially being delivered in phases, though no route has been decided at this stage. It could also depend on other rail improvements being funded and completed, including the planned upgrade of the North Cotswold line, which the County Council says it remains committed to. Funding for a rail project of this significance would mainly need to come from central government. Andy Graham, leader of West Oxfordshire District Council, said, "We welcome the feasibility study and partnership opportunities to bring an ambitious project to fruition with the County Council and other stakeholders. There is much work to be done and we will need to create the framework to ensure it is fully costed as an investment that will make a difference to the lives of our residents and address current and future employment. It's not what we do for ourselves today, but what we leave for future generations." The service between Oxford, Whitney and Fairford was stopped in 1962 when many rail lines were cut by Richard Beeching, then the chairman of the British Railways Board.
This next story is about Christmas dinner foods you shouldn't give your dog, and it's quite a long one. With the festive season fast approaching, households across the UK are starting to get excited about their Christmas dinners. From pigs in blankets and turkey to mince pies and Yorkshire puddings, there are so many delicious foods to look forward to. But how many of these Christmas delights are we able to pass on to our dogs? The experts at Animal Friends Pet Insurance said they saw monthly toxic ingestion claims peak in December 2022, with Christmas Eve recording the most claims out of the whole year, followed closely by Christmas Day. Already, the pet insurance experts have seen Google search volume for human foods dogs can eat increase by 1,257%, and that was for October alone. So, to make sure dog owners are aware of what they can and can't feed their furry four-legged friends this festive season, Animal Friends Pet Insurance has teamed up with Director of Clinical Operations at Joy Pet Care, Dr. Sam Webster, to reveal exactly what you can and can't feed your dog over the Christmas period and the toxic ingestion signs to be aware of. Christmas foods you shouldn't give to your dog. There are 9 main festive foods to avoid giving your dog this Christmas. Pigs in blankets and other fatty meats. Dr. Sam said, pigs in blankets and other fatty meats could lead to pet obesity and pancreatitis. As much as your pet might beg for a meaty treat, it's best to avoid giving them these. Instead, stick to unseasoned lean meats such as chicken or turkey. Gravy. Dr. Sam explained, gravy often has high salt and fat content. You must avoid this, especially in dogs with heart disease or a history of pancreatitis. Mince pies, stollen, Christmas pudding and other puddings. Explaining why, Dr. Sam said, raisins, sultanas and grapes are extremely toxic for dogs and must always be avoided. Even small amounts can be dangerous, so refrain from feeding your pup any dessert that has any of these ingredients. Mince pies and other puddings with a high nut and sugar content may also cause pancreatitis. Cooked bones, e.g. chicken bones or a roasted lamb bone. Dr. Sam commented, cooked bones are not safe for dogs due to them commonly causing constipation, intestinal obstruction or even perforation, piercing a painful hole to internal organs, which can be life-threatening. Stuffing. Dr. Sam commented, dogs should avoid stuffing as it has a high salt and fat content which can be difficult to digest. Dogs with heart disease should especially avoid it. Stuffing also often contains onions, which are highly toxic to dogs. Bulb vegetables, or any onions and garlic. Dr. Sam said, bulb vegetables such as onions and garlic are toxic for dogs. Very small amounts may not cause issues, but should always be avoided to be safe. Yorkshire puddings. Dr. Sam explained, Yorkshire puddings can be challenging for dogs to digest due to their high fat and salt content. Alcohol. Dr. Sam added, alcohol is extremely toxic and can have long-lasting effects on their liver and brain. Dogs do not metabolize alcohol well and should never be given it. Alcohol should also be stored out of a dog's reach to avoid accidents. Chocolate. The expert from Joy Pet Care explained, chocolate is highly toxic for dogs. It includes fat, sugar, caffeine, and a bitter alkaloid called theobromine, which can cause nervous system disorders, as well as heart and kidney failure. Avoid any chocolate-related products, e.g. hot chocolate, chocolate bars, chocolate cake. Other foods you should avoid giving to your dog this Christmas include cured meat and smoked salmon, potatoes with added salt, butter or oil, nuts, sauces, e.g. mint or cranberry, cheese or cream, and sweets. Animal well-being specialist at Animal Friends Pet Insurance, Katrine George, added, besides food and drink, other festive items could prove harmful to your pet too. Whilst poinsettia and mistletoe are popular Christmas decorations, if ingested, they can also have toxic consequences. Symptoms of toxic ingestion. If you are concerned your dog has eaten something he or she shouldn't have, contact your vets immediately. You can look out for the signs they have eaten something they shouldn't have by looking out for the symptoms of toxic ingestion. These symptoms, according to the experts at Animal Friends Pet Insurance and Dr. Sam, are vomiting, diarrhea, lethargy, convulsions, drooling, dehydration, tremors, high temperature, agitation, pale gums, abnormal heart rhythm, hyperactivity, and high blood pressure. What foods you can feed your dog at Christmas? Katherine George said, not all foods at the Christmas dinner table are detrimental for your dog, and you can still serve them a pup-appropriate festive meal. A safe dinner can include lean meats like turkey and chicken, along with some vegetable favourites such as carrots, parsnips, broccoli and cauliflower, all in moderation and without seasonings.
A grand fireworks display which took place at a council-run park has given a dog depression, its owner has claimed. The November 4th event at South Park in East Oxford hosted more than 20,000 people and raised thousands for charity, but left the turf churned up by vehicles accessing the site. Bonzo, a Cavalier Spaniel, is no longer able to play ball at his local park because of how muddy it is. Owner Ros Thomas said, there are other dogs that are suffering as well, a gang of depressed dogs. I can take him to the park on a leash, but he's not allowed off the leash because he'll run into the mud. It's his joy chasing after the ball. Miss Thomas added that she now had to drive to University Park to play ball with her dog, which is not what the council want you to do, given efforts to reduce pollution in the city. When asked how she knew that Bonzo was depressed, Miss Thomas said he'd been lying down a lot, which he doesn't usually do, and was nastier with the cats, persecuting and barking at them. Dog friends Fred, a Jack Russell mix, and Lola, a bulldog, were apparently also fed up and upset at the situation. Oxford City Council has owned South Park since it was donated by the Oxford Preservation Trust in 1959 for public use. The council said in a statement, the period of prolonged heavy rainfall in the week leading up to the event left the ground saturated, resulting in areas of the park becoming rutted and churned by the event setup and the heavy footfall during the event itself. Following concerns raised, discussions are taking place with key stakeholders to investigate what steps can be taken to reduce the impacts on the park in future years. However, the effect of climate change has significantly delayed the onset of the frosts and led to more regular, wetter autumns. The fireworks event is run entirely by volunteers from the Round Table, which donates all profits to charity. Miss Thomas relayed that she had got her dog following a breast cancer diagnosis, and he had cured me more than any other treatment did. She added that she'd been feeding Bonzo extra things and even getting him steak, but this had not improved his condition. "They don't hand out antidepressants to dogs," Miss Thomas said. "I know a lot of people who've been upset. He's an ever so adorable dog, and he's just got this cute face. I don't want to be a moaner."
Campaigners are planning to use village stocks in a bid to save their pub. The Fox Inn in Middle Barton, West Oxfordshire, is a Grade 2 listed 18th century pub, and over the last decade it has often been closed for lengthy periods. At the end of June, the owner put the Fox on the market for £495,900, and it has been closed ever since. Villagers successfully applied for ACV, Asset of Community Value, status for the Fox in 2021, and they now have until the end of this year to make a bid. Shares are being sold in the run-up to Christmas. Richard Brown, MBE, who is leading the bid, said, "In today's world, pubs need to totally reinvent themselves, both in the way they are run and the way they are used. We know that community pubs have more than a 99% success rate. We believe that only our community can save our Fox." The stocks in Middle Barton stood in Fox Lane behind the Fox Inn until 1868 and were used to punish people in the community for minor crimes. A local craftsman has constructed a new set to be used in conjunction with the bid to buy the Fox and reopen it as a community-owned pub. It is planned to have the stocks available for fundraising events and to erect them at the pub when it reopens. It's not known when the stocks were first installed in Middle Barton, but according to a 15th century law, the Statute of Labourers Act of 1405, all towns and villages were required to provide a set of stocks for the punishment of petty offences. The last recorded use of stocks in England was in 1872. Since then, their use as a legal punishment has largely been forgotten, even though it is believed never to have been formally repealed in UK law. Chairman of the local parish meeting, Steve Ferrelly, said, "The parish certainly welcomes the idea of reinstating the village stocks and the community bid to buy the Fox Inn, although we don't anticipate using them for their original purpose." The Barton's Community Benefit Society is organising the bid to buy the 18th century Grade 2 listed pub. The community share offer was launched on November the 20th, and information is available at crowdfunder.co.uk/p/save-our-fox, where the shares can also be purchased. The last recorded use of the stocks as punishment in England was on June the 11th, 1872, in Newbury, Berkshire, when Mark Tuck was fixed in the stocks for 4 hours for drunkenness and disorderly conduct. The Barton's Community Benefit Society Limited was set up by residents of Middle Barton with the aim of saving the Fox Inn. It was put on the market and closed by the owner's Stonegate Group in June this year. The shares campaign is being backed by former EastEnders actress Tamsin Outhwaite.
A new alternative Christmas experience has been launched at Westgate, Oxford. This year the centre is home to Wasteless Wonderland, a contemporary reinterpretation of the classic Christmas market with a sustainable theme. Wasteless Wonderland is curated by the design studio company Hemingway Design. The event offers good-for-the-planet gifts from independent designer makers, festive food produce and street food from local suppliers, as well as workshops that reuse and repurpose leftovers from Christmases past. Launched last Friday, November the 24th, it runs until Friday, December the 22nd, and shoppers will be able to experience a festival lineup of attractions, events and experiences. There'll be Christmas star-making workshops using only wood offcuts, kaleidoscope gift-making using recycled Christmas cards, and Japanese zero-waste gift-wrapping company, courtesy of the Fushoshiki Wrap Company. They will have the chance to go for the personal touch and craft some homemade decorations, such as wreath making using natural resources, seasonal foliage and adornments that can be found in your garden. There are expected to be more than 30 activities, attractions and traders, including designer makers selling slow fashion and reworked vintage across the month-long experience. There will be weekend workshops, interactive elements, entertainment and a toy swap shop gift exchange. Three food brands from Oxfordshire will be part of the experience. The Wonky Food Company will be selling jars of great tasting relishes that use imperfect and surplus fruit and veg that helps tackle food waste. Climatarian Kitchen will be serving street food dishes all made from surplus food, while Damascus Rose, a social enterprise supporting refugee women in Oxford, will be selling delicious Middle Eastern food. Working with John Lewis Partnership's Creative Studio, surplus shelving has been repurposed into market stalls and set flats have been reused to build part of the street food kitchen. For the musically minded, there will be an opportunity to play your favourite Christmas tunes with the Junk Orchestra's Giant Music Mushrooms. The orchestra is a supersonic collection of reinvented objects, recycled into musical instruments. Each Friday we'll see Wasteless Wonderland host Friday Lates from 5 till 9. A pop-up bar from Toast will be exclusive to Friday Lates, with the company's award-winning craft beer brewed with surplus fresh bread that would otherwise go to waste. Toast profits go to charities working to fix a wasteful food system. Friday Lates will also include the Recycle DJ Party, with Charity Shop DJ, who uses vinyl records sourced solely from charity shops to trigger memories. People can pick a record, get behind the turntables and have a go at being a DJ themselves, dedicating their tracks to friends at the event. Oxford City Council has unveiled a plan to offer emergency beds to rough sleepers this winter amid forecasts of plummeting temperatures. The Council's Severe Weather Emergency Protocol, SWEP, is activated during freezing weather. The scheme provides shelter for anyone experiencing rough sleeping, even those with no legal right to claim UK benefits or housing, or those refusing help and accommodation. SWEP is activated whenever the Met Office anticipates freezing overnight temperatures, allowing emergency beds to be made available. The Council also holds the discretion to offer this emergency provision in other extreme weather conditions, such as snow, sub-zero, feels-like temperatures, or warmer nights amidst prolonged freezing episodes. The weekend before last, November 25th and 26th, Oxford saw freezing temperatures on the Friday and Saturday nights. In Oxfordshire, temperatures were expected to drop to -2 degrees at night, according to the Met Office. The Council used its discretion to make sweat beds available all weekend, allowing outreach workers to engage with people on the Monday morning. Also on Monday, the forecast would be reviewed and a decision made whether to extend the provision. The Council, in collaboration with various partners, has secured a minimum of 36 emergency bed spaces across Oxford, having contingency plans to offer more beds if necessary. Most spaces will be shared with overnight staffing to assist people who take refuge indoors. Access to sweat beds is facilitated through St Mungo's outreach and assessment team, which engages intensively with the rough sleeping population. Beds are allocated throughout the day with guidance on access points and timings given to the recipients. Outside of pre-allocated sweat beds, those in need can go to O'Hanlon House between 11 and midnight. Councillor Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "Nobody should have to sleep rough in Oxford, and sweat can offer a vital lifeline for people at risk during freezing winter temperatures." SWEP also gives us another chance to offer them the support they might need to leave the streets behind for good. If you are concerned about someone experiencing rough sleeping, you can contact St Mungo's on 07590 862049, or by emailing outreach.oxford@mungos.org. St Mungo's works intensively with people experiencing rough sleeping and will allocate sweat rooms during the day, telling people how to access the service and where, when and where to go. Further details about sweat arrangements are available on the website. For concerns regarding individuals experiencing rough sleeping, the public can reach out directly to the St Mungo's team.
A popular community cat who lived in a hardware store in Bicester has been run over in a car park. Tributes have been paid to Steve, a 14-year-old tabby-like cat who spent his time at Wicks in Bicester. A Facebook page set up for Steve with 2,200 followers posted, "Thank you for all the love you have shown him over his years as a Bicester character. R.I.P. The Harrison family, who owns Steve, has set up a fundraiser for a memorial plaque, with any extra money raised going to the RSPCA. Speaking to the BBC, owner Jay Harrison said, "Steve was a stray from a little town in Southern Ireland who kept following me home when I lived there. He was only a kitten and didn't have an owner, so we took him in. In 2011, we moved to England, and after we got another cat, Steve just stopped coming home. We found out that he had been spending his time at Wicks in Bicester, and he basically lived there since 2015. Mr. Harrison added that Steve found his home in Wicks, and the staff there gave the cat a high visibility jacket and his own seat in the staff room. Speaking to the BBC, Sarah Harrison said people had been leaving tributes to Steve on social media. He said he was a cat for the community. We are devastated as a family, but the joy and love he has given to people is a comfort."
A pub has organised a nearly nude calendar to help raise money for a school as part of its annual fundraising efforts. Landlords, landladies and locals posed across the bar and in front of fruit machines at the 100 Acres pub in Bicester. They posed for calendars that will help raise money for Bardwell School for children with special educational needs. Photos for the calendars were taken by a smartphone photography specialist based in Bicester, and the first print reel of calendars has already sold out. Liz Curtis, who took over as landlady of the pub 2 years ago, said, "The school means a lot to us. We have people who come into the pub who are friends with people who work there. The calendar was a raunchy bit of fun and it took a lot of balls from our locals here. We like doing charity events like this because we want this to be a family pub. It's nice to have all the families involved and we just want to bring the community together. I took the pub over 2 years ago. It had a bad reputation at the time. Nobody really went in there. We turned it around." The hobbyist photographer who took the photos for the calendars, Jill Lambert, was happy to be asked. She said, "One of the parents at the school put my name forward for the job. Then one of the bar staff, Chelsea Harvey, got in touch. I've never done anything like it before, but I was really proud of the results. The calendars look great. It was really nice for everyone involved too. Everyone was heavily involved with the selection of photos. It was very much a group decision. The men wore jock straps and dicky bows. The ladies were not fully revealed either. We had well-placed bottles of wine, pint glasses, and people wore things to cover themselves up. It was a very enlightening experience. They were all really good sports. By the end of the shoot, I'd forgotten everyone was walking around semi-naked. It was just like being on a beach. The calendars have raised over £200 so far." Ms. Lambert runs Jet Black Squares Oxford, a smartphone photography company that teaches people how to enhance their phone photography skills. She added, "We take group safaris of up to 10 people out and teach them how to use their phone cameras. The calendars are available to buy at the 100 Acres pub in Hart Place in Bicester. A parent with children at Bardwell School, David Ford, said, "In these times of limited funding, this is massive for our school."
A three-time World Cup winner Maciej Janowski has been announced as the rider to lead brand new team Oxford Spires in the Premiership next year. Janowski returns to British Speedway for the first time in 8 years, having won 8 Grand Prix and 3 World Cups in his career so far. Also in the Spire side will be 3-time British champion Chris Harris, plus previous Premiership winners Nikolai Klint and Rohan Tungate. Charles Wright, British champion in 2019, Cheetah's youngster Ashton Bougan and fan favourite Lewis Kerr complete the Spire's lineup. Team manager Peter Schurk said, "We're at the beginning of one of the most exciting periods in our club's proud 84-year history. The Premiership is one of the World Speedway's most competitive leagues, and we've built a team we believe can elevate our reach to not just Oxfordshire and its surrounds, but globally. Having Marche lead the team is a great scoop for us. Only last year he was the 3rd fastest rider in the world and has an outstanding record at the highest level. We've packed the main body of the team with riders proven at Premiership level and on the new Oxford Stadium track. Having Lewis back for a second season with the club was something we really wanted to make happen too, and I have no doubt our supporters are just as pleased as we are. We've been really impressed by the commitment and determination of Ashton too, and next year represents a great opportunity for him riding at Premiership and Championship level for us. Of course, it's the off-season and the boys are doing their own things, but we've connected online and already the team spirit we have prioritised with the Cheetahs and Chargers in previous seasons is there, which I'm happy about."
This week, Memory Lane was about how girls at Milham Ford School in Oxford created a bright and cheerful mural at the new John Radcliffe Hospital. Like all new buildings, the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford was a picture of health when it opened, smartly decorated and without a hint of dirt or dust. But in the opinion of consultant paediatrician Dr. David Baum, it was a bit stark and forbidding, with too many blank walls. When he visited a children's hospital in Sweden and saw it a riot of colour, he decided the children's wards back home needed brightening up. The art department at Milham Ford Girls' School in Marston Road was approached, and it wasn't long before this bright and cheerful mural was delivered to one of the children's waiting rooms at the hospital. More than 30 girls from all age groups spent 6 weeks painting the 12-foot by 4-foot mural under the direction of art department head Peter Barker and the sixth form girls who designed it. 4 girls went back to the hospital to apply the finishing touches after it was installed in 1980. Dr. Baum said, "I'm absolutely thrilled with it. It's bright, colourful and exciting, and it's an important milestone. If everyone likes it, we hope to ask Milham Ford and other schools to do other things in other areas of the children's part of the hospital, where we still have huge expanses of white walls." The school was founded in East Oxford in the 1880s and closed in 2003. The school's origins date back to the 1890s, when sisters Emma and Jane Moody started a private nursery school for boys and girls located in their house in Iffley Road.
Dozens of students slept in queues through the night to secure university accommodation, with some waiting for nearly 24 hours. Undergraduates from Oxford University and Oxford Brookes lined up outside the Finders Keepers estate agents in St Clement's on Tuesday this week. Some had set up camping chairs outside the agency and came armed with hot water bottles and blankets in anticipation of its 9 a.m. opening the next day. Student housing shortages in the UK have been blamed by many. A student of business at Oxford Brookes University in Headington, Millie Ashley, 19, said, "We tried to queue last week from 4:30 a.m. and there were already people camping out from 11 the previous night. So we decided to beat them this time around and go even earlier. We got dominoes, had a good chat. It's been okay, really, but I can't feel my feet at all, and I'm wearing 4 jumpers, leggings, joggers and a coat." Ms. Ashley has been in the queue since 10 a.m. on Monday morning, November the 27th, along with friend Will Johnson, 19, to get their dream property. Mr. Johnson, who studies property development at the university, added, "Loads of people want to get the house we are going for. We've met 10 people today who are trying to get it. It's probably the best four-bed property and in a good place too, so we've just sat on these chairs all night. It was absolutely freezing. I'm wearing 3 jumpers right now. It's so ridiculous we have to be out here for so long. It's just a scam to drive up demand beyond belief. The guys at the back, they always end up with the worst houses ever because they have to. They can't get anything. PhD student of planetary science Tom, 22, said he did not mind queuing as he was doing it voluntarily. He said, "My feet are pretty cold, but we're choosing to do it. It is freezing, but we can leave whenever we want. If we weren't waiting, we would still get a place. It'd just not be as nice. It's quite a stupid system. You think they would have a digital queue or something, but I don't know if this is just an artifact of the old way people used to get student accommodation or something." Friend Jared, also 22, who does modern Middle Eastern studies at St. Cross College, added, "This is essentially just us deciding that, yes, it's a bit grim, but we would rather wait here for a night and get a nice place locked in."
Blenheim Palace made a significant contribution to the UK economy last year, according to new figures from Oxford Brookes Business School. The study revealed that the palace in Woodstock had an economic impact of £175 million, representing a 28% year-on-year growth, driven largely by a post-COVID bounce back. This sizeable figure includes the palace's popular Christmas and Halloween events, which contributed £32 million and supported 636 jobs. An additional £63 million was generated by the 800,000 visitors to the UNESCO World Heritage Site and spending at surrounding businesses, a rise of 21%. Dominic Hare, chief executive of Blenheim Palace, said, "We're delighted that jobs supported outside of Blenheim have grown even faster than our economic contribution, which shows the importance of Blenheim to our flourishing local economy. The numbers above also reflect big capital investments during the year by Blenheim and its partners, building the likes of Adventure Play and the Blenheim Palace Retreat Lodges. Both opened after the period measured in this study, but should drive great future benefit." Other key findings from the Economic Impact Study of 2022-23 reveal that Blenheim Palace directly employs 560 staff members and supports 3,435 jobs in the wider economy.
A new Oxford study has found GP appointments carried out over the phone or online can potentially overlook diagnosing serious illnesses, putting patients' health at a concerning risk. Researchers have found that mistakes which are made through remote consultations are rare, but there is a risk of patients being underdiagnosed. GPs can be swayed with the information that is passed on to them rather than holding a consultation with the patient directly. There is also the case that less qualified staff do not take immediate action when hearing signs of potential illnesses. The chief investigator from the University of Oxford, Professor Greenhoff, said, "When safety incidents happen, organisational pressures and poor communication often play a major role. This new research has identified more precisely where the risks lie and what measure we can take to reduce risks further." The Oxford study, which was published by BMJ Quality and Safety, assessed the data from 95 UK safety incidents between 2020 and 2023. It specifically focused on complaints, settled compensation claims, and reports. Interviews were also carried out with practice staff, although some errors were made in relation to serious conditions such as congenital heart disease, pulmonary oedema, sepsis, cancer, and diabetic foot complications. To quote from the study, these would likely have been readily diagnosed with an in-person examination. The study also added that several safety incidents, including clinicians assuming that a diagnosis made in a remote consultation was definitive rather than provisional, especially when subsequent consultations were remote. Therefore, such errors could become ingrained and lead to diagnostic overshadowing and delayed diagnosis. In the Oxford study, there was a particular case where a woman in her 70s was experiencing sudden breathlessness. She was told by a GP receptionist that she would receive a call back, but this never happened because the receptionist then became distracted by another patient in the waiting room. The telephone patient's health sadly deteriorated, and she died in her home the same afternoon. In a different case, a 16-year-old girl also died of sepsis after a GP spoke to her older sister on the phone and mistakenly diagnosed her with glandular fever. Based on these many upsetting incidents, there are cases where some GPs realised the limitations of remote consultations. One GP said, "I've remembered one father that called up. He really didn't seem to be concerned and was very much underplaying it. Then when I did a video call, you know, this child had intercostal recession and looked really poorly. It was quite scary, actually, that you'd had the conversation, and if you just listened to what the dad was saying, you probably wouldn't be concerned." The study has found that patients with pre-existing conditions and the very young and elderly patients were particularly difficult to assess by telephone. It recommended clinicians to ensure the patient knows what the next steps are in their care, while patients should make it thoroughly clear if they feel their health is deteriorating.
Oxford Brookes students have organised a protest over forthcoming course closures and staff redundancies. The student-led picket will take place outside the university's John Henry Brookes building on Tuesday, November the 28th. Organiser Wojciech Yuri Lewinski, a fourth-year Japanese studies student, said, "We find the announced staff layoffs absolutely appalling. Not only will it result in the university providing a much worse experience for the students, it also carries a risk of destroying individual lives. Jobs in academia are scarce at the moment. Our professors haven't just been excellent teachers. They have always gone above and beyond and often significantly changed our lives. We won't stand for this injustice. We are here for the professors and the academia, not the upper management." The university announced the closures of its music and maths courses, along with a reduction of academic staff numbers last month. The university is also proposing to reduce salaried academic staff numbers across several programmes, including anthropology, English and creative writing, history, film and architecture. A spokesperson said 48 staff are at risk, with a view to around 20 posts being made redundant. An online petition, which now has 4,300 signatures, was also started by music student Haifa Veen, who came from France to study at the university. You can sign the petition at change.org.
The youngest female scholar to be made a Fellow of the University of Oxford's All Souls College has won the Waterstones Book of the Year Award. Every year, Waterstones booksellers are called on to nominate an outstanding book they particularly enjoyed recommending to readers over the previous year. The bookstore operator announced Catherine Rundell's Impossible Creatures, a dazzling children's book, as the winner of this year's prestigious award. The coveted award has an illustrious list of previous winners, ranging from Philip Pullman and Sally Rooney to Charlie Maxey and Paul McCartney. Ms. Rundell grew up in London, Zimbabwe and Belgium. She completed her undergraduate studies at St. Catherine's College, Oxford, and was subsequently made a fellow at All Souls College. She said, "I am so wildly, overwhelmingly delighted to have won the Book of the Year. It's an honour and a joy. It's especially thrilling in that children's books have historically been overlooked in Britain, So to have this prize shine its superbly powerful light on a children's book feels both wonderful and bold. At their best, I think children's books are electric. They galvanise the imagination of both children and adults. They can tell us what we have forgotten. They tell us of the oldest, toughest, warmest, sharpest truths of the human heart. I'm overjoyed that Impossible Creatures is joining the ranks of the remarkable previous winners of the Book of the Year. I am so hugely grateful to Waterstones and to its booksellers. Ms. Randall is a passionate advocate of children's books and children's authors, and her award-winning and best-selling books have been translated into 30 languages. Impossible Creatures is an adventure which plunges readers into a richly imagined world of magnificent creatures and ancient world-shaking secrets. Bea Carvajal, Waterstone's head of books, said, "We are extremely proud to present Catherine Rundell's Impossible Creatures as our 2023 Book of the Year, as chosen by Waterstone's booksellers. This is as close to perfect as fiction gets. Immaculate world-building, dazzling storytelling, and adventure galore. Miss Randall isn't afraid to trust young readers with weighty themes, but never loses sight of the need to make reading joyous and fun, celebrating humour with as much care as awe and wonder. It is an immediate classic which children will delight in for years to come, and which will remind adults of the genius to be found within the pages of children's books. Rundell is a truly exciting talent, and we can't wait to share this wonderful story with readers of all ages as our Book of the Year."
A children's hospice which improves the lives of terminally ill children and their families in Oxfordshire and the surrounding counties has been rated outstanding. Helen and Douglas House Children's Hospice in Oxford was inspected by the Care Quality Commission on July the 18th. The inspectors said staff understood and respected the personal, cultural, social and religious needs of children, young people and their families, and how they may relate to care needs. The service met the needs of all the children and young people who use the service. Children and young people received pain relief soon after requesting it, and inspectors saw staff regularly checking pain levels of the children. And when things went wrong, staff documented incidents well and the service learned from them. Roger James, CQC Deputy Director for the South, said, "When we inspected Helen and Douglas House, we found a service where staff were very knowledgeable about the children and young people they looked after. They knew how to support children, young people and their families in an individual, personalised way."
Are you dreaming or dreading a white Christmas this year? Find out our chances of snow for the big day. Temperatures have begun to take a turn, as the Met Office predicted snow to fall in the UK as early as Tuesday, November the 28th. The Weather Service has issued snow and ice warnings for large parts of the country, as Brits are told to prepare for hazardous conditions. In the warning, snow is predicted to fall in parts of north and eastern Scotland, as well as northeast England. Will the UK get snow this winter? With wintry showers forecast for the coming weeks too, are we likely to see snow over the festive season this year? As we count down the days until December the 25th, the Met Office has told Brits to expect cold conditions to continue, with wintry showers expected mainly along the coasts in the north and east. What are the odds for snow on Christmas Day? The UK has a 1 in 2 chance of seeing snowflakes this Christmas, according to the latest betting odds. Dr. Richard Wilde, the first person in the world to secure a PhD in snow trends, spoke to Betfred about chances of seeing the white stuff this year. The man, nicknamed Dr. Snow, commented, "Since 1960, around half the years have seen at least 5% of recording network recording snowfall on Christmas Day. We can expect more than half of Christmas days to have snow. Long-range forecasts are known to be inaccurate. Mostly they work on a 3-month average, so at the moment that looks at December to February. There are multiple forecasts available from organisations across the world. Almost all of them are suggesting that December as a whole for the UK looks like experiencing temperatures slightly warmer than average. But it doesn't mean there won't be periods in December when it won't be colder than normal. You may get some short, sharp days where it is expected to be cold. The atmosphere is so complex when it comes to long-term forecasts. There are so many climate drivers that can influence our weather, even if they are somewhere a long way away in other parts of the planet. Moving closer to Christmas and Boxing Day, the Met Office predicts that conditions are most likely to be changeable through this period. It expects that between Tuesday, December the 12th and Tuesday, December the 26th, the weather will be wetter and windier than average conditions, especially in the west and northwest. It continued, temperatures are most likely to be near or above average overall, although this doesn't rule out some spells of cold weather and associated wintry hazards.
And now a seasonal nursery rhyme, Jack Frost by Cecily Pike. Look out, Jack Frost's about. He's after our fingers and toes. And all through the night, the gay little sprite is working where nobody knows. He'll climb each tree, so nimble is he. His silvery powder he'll shake. To windows he'll creep, and while we're asleep, such wonderful pictures he'll work. Across the grass he'll merrily pass, and change all its greenness to white. And then home he'll go, and laugh, ho, ho, ho. What fun I've had in the night.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note, there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.